on WSLR LP 96.5 in Sarasota. This is Florence Farringer with your WSLR news headlines for April 30th, 2024. The state of Florida joined Georgia, Alabama, and South Carolina in suing the federal government over its new interpretation of Title IX. This new interpretation extends its protection to include all sexualities and gender identities, something which these state governments claim is not in the spirit of the law and infringes on the state's rights to govern their educational institutions as they see fit. A lawsuit against the state of Florida alleging the state government did not properly inform Medicaid recipients before kicking them off of their health care last year has been given the go-ahead by a federal judge. Medicaid coverage was greatly expanded across the country in the immediate aftermath of the COVID-19 pandemic, but last year Florida decided to pull out of this extended coverage, pulling the rug out from hundreds of thousands of Floridians and leaving them uninsured. Parking is set to become a little less free in Sarasota, as city-owned parking garages will be dropping their grace period from 2 hours to one, and 80 free parking spots on Lido are to be converted to paid parking. The first turtle nest of the season has been spotted on Venice Beach. It belongs to a loggerhead sea turtle, the number one nester of Southwest Florida, and a threatened and federally protected species. Moat recommends that should you see nesting turtles or their hatchlings, you should remain quiet and keep a distance. Lights on beachside porches and flashlights at night are also discouraged. If you're interested in keeping tabs on the Moat Aquarium's turtle nest count this year, visit moat.org/2024nesting, all one word. Gas prices continue to fluctuate, slowly rising after over a week of gradually falling in price. The statewide average is currently at $3.57 per gallon. This has been Florence Farringer with your WSLR News headlines for April 30th, 2024.
You are listening to WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota.
This is show 35 of our Changing Environment and is being recorded on April 30th, 2024.
I'm Julie Morris.
I'm John O'Miller, and we are assisted today by Alvaro Montalegre.
Our guest today is Tom Matrullo. Tom is a local activist and organizer who's been involved in forming and leading a new entity, Sarasota Citizen Action Network, SCAN, which he will tell us all about.
The views, comments, and opinions that come from our interview shows, on-air personalities, and from our call-in guests are uncensored, and those views and opinions can be widespread and extremely diverse. The opinions or views expressed by SAME do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of WSLR, our staff, or volunteers.
Tom, it's great to have you here with us today, and we'd like to explore with you what precipitated the organization of SCAN, and what are the goals of SCAN, and what are the issues that you are embracing or focusing on?
Okay, sure, Julie. First of all, it's nice to see you guys. So let me just give you some perspective. I worked in journalism for a number of years. I came down here in 1989 for a job at the Herald Tribune, and I covered business there. Business turned out, since I was mainly in Charlotte County, to be mostly about building, construction, development, and wayward constructors at times. But mostly it involved my attention to what was going on in that economic sector. So I would go to the Regional Planning Council in Fort Myers monthly. And what I gleaned from months, years of going there, was that the state took very seriously at that time the process of large-scale development. They called them DRIs, Developments of Regional Impact, and they had a team of planners. I believe there were 7 regional planning councils around the state. The Fort Myers one was the one relevant to Charlotte and Sarasota counties. So often the commissioners from those counties would attend these meetings, but not always. They were under no obligation. But the state funded these councils. All of that changed around the year 2011, when Rick Scott got elected. One of the first things he did was remove the necessity of having large-scale plans reviewed by the regional planning councils, which meant that basically the responsibility for planning decisions fell or devolved upon local boards. That would be the Sarasota County Commission, and in the city of Sarasota, their commission as well. And it's been that way ever since 2011, which is, curiously enough, around the time that the developers were reeling from the shock of 2008.
Yeah.
And that that economic obstacle that sent a number of them into bankruptcy also gave them some motivation when they were coming back and the economy was beginning to rebound in 2011, 2012, to become more determined about getting their plans approved. And to that extent, they would start investing more in commission races. So the political investment went up. Whereas before, I think they were investing in elections, hoping to get some influence. After 2011-12, we see a flood of candidates who are basically working for developers. And I think that became evident over time. What this led to was a regime in which people were beginning more and more to feel like their neighborhoods were being impinged upon by developments coming along, and they would go into the county and they would speak, often attempting to use reason, logic, lawyers, anything they could bring. And they were more and more finding that the board didn't seem to be listening. There was no exchange. There was no back and forth. So this was one thing that kind of triggered, I believe, a sense among the people of the county that they needed to do something about this. But what? Well, I think what we're trying to do with SCAN is simply get the various siloed, gated communities around Sarasota to connect, to talk to each other, to... We have meetings where we don't really know what people are going to say, but they bring in either issues that they are having in their communities, and we've been to Venice, we've heard from Northport, and of course various communities in Sarasota. They bring in what they are experiencing, but they also bring in ideas that they've come up with to try to counterbalance these issues. So SCAN has actually had right now 4 meetings that we've had one a month, and each one has been, I'd say, a pretty lively event where people have shared information and also, I think, become heartened by the fact that they realize they're not alone. We have a community where a lot of people are experiencing the same thing. So that would be sort of the background and motivation. What I could add to that real briefly is that the planning that goes on these days in Sarasota County has, in my view, become rather slipshod, rather careless, rather indifferent to what citizens have to say, And what we're seeing more and more is a level, and I can give you some examples, of decision making that is frightening to me because it's not grappling with the actual content and substance of a plan. It's basically saying, oh, this sounds good, let's do it. Well, that's not what the regional planning councils were about. And I feel like I was a little bit privileged to have that perspective.
So I want to go back to the regional planning council situation. It's something I think a lot of people don't know about. When I ran for office, one of my emphasis was on regional planning. And that's because so many issues that affect Sarasota County are, in fact, regional issues. We have the water supply is now regional. We have electric transmission lines, which are regional. We have a great example is hurricane evacuation. So there are people, Gaspereau Island is partially in Charlotte County and partially in Lee County. And so if a hurricane's approaching, people in the southern Lee County portion of Gaspereau Island have to drive north through the Charlotte County portion. And then for them to evacuate, they may end up coming through Sarasota County. So Sarasota County's hurricane strategy needs to actually be considering what's going on in Lee County with development there. And so that was one of the functions that the Regional Planning Council provided. And Julie and I, in our early careers, we worked on comprehensive plans in Glades County and Charlotte County. And so we'd already been familiar with the role of the regional planning councils. Right now, the figure I've seen is that the Southwest Florida Regional Planning Council is down to 3 employees. Now, some of the regional councils that still exist in Florida have 18 employees. So we are just, you know, skating on thin ice here. It's the function and the capacity of this organization to do analysis related to rising sea level, hurricane evacuation, these issues related to things across boundaries. So, for instance, one of the functions of the regional planning councils is that if you look at a map, a planning map of Sarasota County, it goes right up to the edge of Sarasota County, but there's no information whatsoever about what's happening in Manatee County or DeSoto County or Charlotte County. And so they could be planning a massive development of any sort, whether it's residential or water supply or anything, that immediately on Sarasota's borders, it would have tremendous effect on our traffic loading, etc. But that's not that's sort of outside of the bailiwick of Sarasota planning. And so the Regional Planning Council had their eye on that sort of thing and were helping to coordinate that. So that decision, that factor during the Rick Scott administration that led to weakening the regional planning councils, in my opinion, was very devastating. And we won't be surprised if ours is sort of snuffed out functionally altogether, which would be a tremendous loss. They just their archives of information they had regarding various developments and the research that had been done to study proposals was significant in and of itself.
Well, yeah. you know, when I visited the Regional Planning Council at Fort Myers, it was the guy in charge there was Wayne Daltrey, and I really liked him. I mean, he had a wonderful grasp of planning, of regionality, but also a great sense of humor. And I looked forward to attending those meetings just for the sake of being in the same room with Wayne. But they had a good team down there. Now, I just saw a story recently, which perhaps you did as well, that the funding for these councils is voluntary now. It just comes from the counties that are supposed to be involved with them. And right now, the one in Lee County is being funded by one of the 6 or 7 counties that should be paying for its expenses.
Yeah, I think Sarasota stopped contributing.
Yeah.
But to the north, the Tampa Bay Regional Planning Council is really effective, and they have this national estuary program that intersects with the Regional Planning Council for Tampa Bay, in a really positive, additive kind of way. Mm-hmm. And so I think if you look at what's happened to the regional planning councils around the state of Florida, there's some that are really hitting it, and SCAN is trying to develop with citizens groups, citizens neighborhoods in Sarasota County, and that is so powerful. The hearing from people who are facing the same situation that you are, and learning from them, and being empowered by that. It's just it's a really brilliant organization that others have initiated.
I should certainly mention the others involved. I mean, we have the original group included Lourdes Ramirez from Siesta Key, who is working to try to stop the mega hotel construction out there. We have Gene Duby, Rob Wright, Catherine Young, all from Sarasota Audubon, who are working to try to keep the celery fields not only intact, but they want to rewild parts of the celery field. This is a $5 million investment they are making into the public lands, the quads, that were given to Audubon and the Conservation Foundation. The value of the quads is simply as a buffer to protect the bird nesting area of the celery fields from immediate impacts of incursions. One of the reasons this all happened, of course, was that we had a man who wanted to build a giant pulverizing open air dump, let's just use the word, next to the birding area of the celery fields. And that outraged enough people that it was stopped. And then, unexpectedly, the board decided to convey these lands to Audubon and the Conservation Foundation. But what Audubon is now concerned with is that there is a D.R. Horton plan to build 170 homes right on the other side of the celery fields to the east on a farm that is very close and really ought to be part of the celery fields. But the landowners there are opposing that. They have done their private deal with Horton. And if it is approved, that will be a difficult adjustment, because it is so close, and the birds right now are enjoying a dark sky policy. They're enjoying the peace and quiet. If you go out there at night, it's pretty quiet. Of course, there are a lot more apartments and construction going on. There's now a Publix within view of the celery fields, right next to what is going to be the new county administration building. So Audubon is dealing with all of that. And then there's Mike Hutchinson and his wife, Eileen, out there in Old Myakka, and they are trying to withstand an enormous plan from Lakewood Ranch to move, to create 5,000 more homes moving towards the end of the county, which is where the rural lifestyle is threatened. So there's a lot going on. And the incentive here was, if you changed these three places alone, Siesta Key, Celery Fields, and Old Myakka, in the way that the developers want to change them, you won't recognize Sarasota County. These are iconic properties. These are elements of our landscape and our character as a county that have grown up over many years, and now they're getting threatened.
If you made a vote by mail ballot request, also known as an absentee ballot, prior to November 8th, 2022 general election, it has expired. Vote-by-mail ballot requests are only valid for all elections through the end of the calendar year of the next regularly scheduled general election. So voters need to renew their request with their supervisor of elections. All requests for a vote-by-mail ballot to be mailed to a voter must be received no later than 5 p.m. on the 12th day before the election. Requesting a vote-by-mail ballot only takes a few moments and can be done online using the mail ballot request service at sarasotavotes.com vote.gov or votemanatee.com. Vote-by-mail ballots can also be requested in person at any elections office, calling by phone at 941-861-8618 or faxing, mailing, or emailing a request form to the Supervisor of Elections office. More information can be found at sarasotavotes.gov or votemanatee.com.
So, Tom, we'll repeat this later in the show, but if people go online and look for SCAN, they're likely to come across the Sarasota County Aging Network. And I don't want to cast aspersions on your people that are involved. So tell our listening audience how they get in touch with the Sarasota Citizen Action Network.
Well, there are two easy ways to do that. One is to go to our blog, which basically is just an update of what we've been up to. So we have our meetings and other information from around the county. And that is scansarasota.blogspot.com. ScanSarasota, all one word, .blogspot.com. And that's where we have, for example, the contributions that are being handed over to our candidates. And that in itself, I think, is a useful thing for people to know. Basically here, I think the premise of SCAN is that, are you familiar with the book, The Wisdom of Crowds? It's a wonderful book. You should have a look at it. It's by James Surowiecki. It came out in, I think, 2004 or around then. And it makes the point that in examples of where human judgment is at work, if you have a lot of minds trying to figure out, say, how many beans are in a big bowl, the number that you get if you poll the entire crowd looking at the bowl is going to be more accurate than one person's guess. In a sense, the judgment of the community, when you get it all out there, is actually better than the judgment of any one person or single ruler, if you want. It's kind of a democratic approach to understanding. And it's an interesting concept. Well, we're just applying it here. We're saying, look, we look at the way planning is done in Sarasota. There's no big picture. There's no goal. There's no valuing of the people as a stakeholder in the process. I don't know anybody who's gone into a planning commission meeting about a development that they care to try to modify or oppose, and come out feeling like they were heard. It's not happening anymore. The only people who are heard are guys like Pat Neal. And, you know, we know why they're heard.
The Planning Commission is very interesting because we used to, on a number of our advisory boards, we have distribution requirements, like so many business representatives and environmental representatives, yeah, at-large representatives. We don't really see that in the Planning Commission, and I'm embarrassed to say I no longer remember how many times John Thaxton has applied to be
20.
Okay, 20 times. Here's a former county commissioner who's everyone recognizes as very knowledgeable, and apparently that's why they want to keep him off the Planning Commission. But he repeatedly applies to be a member of the Planning Commission and is repeatedly denied. So we don't have a planning commission that's representative. It would be, just imagine if the planning commission consisted of people that were chosen by lottery, where they went through the voter rolls and just picked a set, are you willing to serve? And then those people would be planning commissioners. We'd have a very different approach to things. And it seems like the planning commission has become a sort of training ground for running for the county commission.
That's actually been observed over time, because we have seen that a number of our commissioners, for example, Mike Moran, Al Mayo, Kotzinger, and Nayunder, right now are people who came out of this kind of training ground of the Planning Commission. You get and by the way, most of the people on the Planning Commission are industry insiders. They are either working with builders, working with construction companies like Mullet Aluminum. You know, I mean, that's just an example. But the problem here is that you're right. The board is not structured to represent the people of Sarasota.
Right.
It's actually representing the business industry right. of Sarasota. We had a good example of that just recently when the Planning Commission heard Pat Neal's latest idea for a mega development south of Clark Road, 2,700 acres, I believe, 6,756 homes planned for this project, along with hundreds of thousands of feet of public space. And
it's called the 3H.
The 3H Ranch.
Ranch, yeah. Okay.
Yes, thank you. And so I attended this meeting, and I have to say, let's put it this way. The Planning Commission, they have a lot of work on their plate. So this meeting started at 5 in the afternoon and went until 8:30 before Pat Neal's plan came before them. They were already tired. They had listened to people haranguing them for hours. And then all of a sudden, Pat Neal and his team take the stage and project this very large and ambitious. I would say the word hubris is not out of place here. This is somebody who really aspires to be the developer of the universe. So what we heard his plan, and then we heard a number of people who talked about why it would really, really impact severely their neighborhoods, which are adjacent to it.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is a street that's a narrow two-lane street that's a dead end. And a guy pointed out, well, if you were to have a fire, and in fact they did have a fire down where Neal wants to develop, you've got one road coming out. This is not a safe situation for the people who are living down there. How do you get out in a fire? Suppose that road is blocked, which it will be by construction traffic because it's the only way in and out. So imagine you're living on this road, and the build-out of this property is till 2042, I believe. So you're thinking, I'm going to be seeing this construction traffic for 20 years. So the point I wanted to make, though, is that after Pat Neal talked and a number of other people came up with real challenges to him, and the county planning staff itself said, we have reservations about some aspects of this plan, the board, the Planning Commission, actually started to talk about these issues, at which point Pat Neal brought up his team of like lawyers, planners, transportation specialists, and one after the other, this fusillade of information and rhetoric came out of them. And the result was that the Planning Commission, like children, just sort of, oh, yes, of course, Mr. Neal. Oh, what a wonderful plan. Thank you very much. Unanimous approval. So the difference between that level of planning and what we were seeing in the Regional Planning Council back in the 90s, well, it's night and day.
You are listening to WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota.
And one thing I'd like to note is that you hear a lot about urban planning. You can find, if you go online, you can see the top schools for urban planning all listed and ranked, and there's dozens of them. Rural planning is a much smaller discipline, and I don't think we have anyone. If somebody wants to call and correct me, that'd be great, but I don't think we have anyone locally whose credentials are rural planning. Mm. And so we have these rural areas in Sarasota County being planned or dealt with by people who are probably from urban planning backgrounds. And so that's a problem right there.
Tom, on the 3H Ranch proposal, the Neil proposal, tell me what you thought the most important staff concerns were about that proposed development.
Well, I think part of it is that it is a gated community that will contain many gated communities. And I believe there were 14 gated communities to be built inside this giant gated community. One issue that came up at the hearing was simply the question of how do you get from one end of it to the other? Will there be roads that actually traverse the entire community, or are you going to go through a series of walls and gates to get from one to the other? Part of the problem is that all this was left pretty vague. You know, you get a colorful picture that looks pretty, but when you want to get the details of, well, how many homes are going to be here, so forth, there wasn't that much substance to it. Now, that's not unusual at this point. We see this a lot in county planning. There was also Pat Neal's idea of building condo buildings that would be 85 feet tall.
Wow.
And at the moment, I don't know that there's any building in our area, maybe downtown Sarasota, but not too many elsewhere that are that tall. Interestingly, the county commission recently ruled that a development proposed for the old mall, the Sarasota Square Mall, could not have buildings taller than 60 feet. Yet they are building a combination of commercial and residential space with 1,200 units they want to put on top of the old mall. So on the one hand, the mall sounded like an area where maybe you could do a high rise, you know, mm-hmm. and the board said no taller than 60 feet.
Mm-hmm.
But Pat Neal wants 85 feet out mm-hmm. in the middle of a cow pasture.
And I've also read that the 2050 plan says that 50% has to be open space, and that Neal has negotiated with the county planning staff to reduce that to 30% open space.
Yes, I believe that is what has been reported, 30 or 33%, which you're right, that goes against the comprehensive plan that is supposed to be the vision for anything out there east of the highway.
Am I correct that another issue is the way in which the meetings are being conducted, that they're doing more meetings by Zoom and
Planning Commission?
Not Planning Commission, but neighborhood workshops.
Neighborhood workshops,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, they're all done by Zoom now. This is after COVID. So when COVID came along, they decided, okay, we'll do them via Zoom. And then when COVID was officially ended, Mark Smith, one of our commissioners, suggested, let's go back to live meetings. Why did he want to do that? Because a lot of people were noticing that when you do them on Zoom, you don't see who else is in the room. You don't know who's there. You don't even see the face of the planners or anything. They might show you a picture, but it's just going to be one picture on your computer of the area. And you're not getting a chance to walk up and look at the map and see that information firsthand or talk to the agents and so forth, the planners who are in the meeting. It's basically controlled by the agents hired by the developer. And I have been in these Zoom meetings where half the time you couldn't even hear the sound. It was going on and off. But when we tried to point that out, it was just ignored. So you got nothing out of the meeting. Now, some of them are better than others. I was in one last night regarding a plan for Old Myakka with Charlie Bailey and Kelly Klepper, two of our star development aides, and they did a very good job. They took all the questions, and there were many, many questions. The people in Old Mayaca are very alert right now to everything going on out there.
Let me just interject. I don't know about you, Tom, but I know I've been to meetings where the most important meeting took place in the parking lot afterwards, where you actually get together with the other people that are concerned about the issue as a chance to organize and share information. So the you may have 3 minutes to make a pitch to somebody that's soliciting input, but in the parking lot, you may have 20 minutes, and it's with people that are actually interested in responding and throwing ideas around and having interaction. So, yeah, the switch to Zoom is another factor, probably comparable to the loss of our regional planning capacity, that's really eating into public participation.
And we've witnessed that instead of having meetings where the staff makes a presentation, the developer makes a presentation, and then people can come up and do individual comments on those presentations, now they are tending to have displays, and you talk informally, one-on-one, with people who are promoting the project, and you never get that chance to make a comment that everybody hears and that people build on about that. And so that's a sort of crowd control suppression of ideas, sharing of ideas, networking that we see more commonly used by government entities these days.
Well, that kind of format I've seen, it's sometimes been presented by, say, the county planning department, mm-hmm. and it's not a formal hearing. Mm-hmm. One of the things about hearings is you're supposed to actually hear from the public. Mm-hmm. Now, that doesn't mean that you're listening. It just means you're hearing. You know, so what I would point out is that over time, even the process of hearing, just like the neighborhood workshops are now all on Zoom, the process of hearings has been modified. And we used to have hearings at like 5:01 in the afternoon, 5:01 p.m. And that would enable people who work to get there and speak. They're a thing of the past. They don't happen. Mm-hmm. Hearings are at like 9 in the morning. Mm-hmm. Or sometimes they'll schedule a hearing for like 2 in the afternoon. We'll do it after lunch, you know. And then the morning agenda moves faster. So they say, well, let's do that hearing now. Well, the people who are the public for whom the hearing, the public hearing is supposed to be, you know, done, don't know that they've changed the time of the hearing. So they're not there. And the board has conducted public hearings about public business where the public that was invited to come to it wasn't there.
I just want to backtrack a little bit to 3H Ranch, and 3H Ranch is the property that's in between the new Sky Ranch, SKYE, and the National Cemetery. And so it's on the south side of Clark Road, and it's a ranch that's currently used to raise cattle. And this would be filling in between the National Cemetery and the newly approved Sky Ranch. Could you explain to us some of the concerns by the residents in Old Mayaca about this new extension of Lakewood Ranch? Well, what, John?
I'm confused now. So Sky Ranch is way south of Lakewood Ranch.
It's on Clark Road. I'm going back to the Old Mayaca concerns. Is that okay?
Yeah, I'm just confused why you were invoking 3H and now jumping over to Old Mayaca, that's all.
I'm trying to be clear.
Okay, thank you.
So, Tom, what are the Old Mayaca concerns regarding the Lakewood Ranch development?
The I would say the primary one is the what's at stake for their way of life. Now, they were a community that actually thought they had locked in their rural lifestyle, the old Mayaka agreement that they had put forward, and they thought that the commission had approved it. And apparently the commission had said, oh, that's very nice, we recognize that exists, but they didn't make it a legal requirement. So it didn't control land use out there. And this is where they thought they were safe, and then they discovered that Rex Jensen and Pat Neal had other ideas. So Lakewood Ranch had stopped at Waterside. Waterside was their latest part of that northern edge of, well, it's all north of University. But now they're continuing. They're moving south and east to the point where they will be within, I would say, 10 miles of the edge of the county. And all of this will be more Lakewood Ranch development, you know, the same kind of thing, houses, gated communities, and so forth.
Lakes. And lakes.
Yeah, they'll build a few more lakes. Right?
Yeah.
But the people there are saying, well, this is going to totally change our life because suddenly we won't be able to see the sky that we've lived with for 40 years. We'll, our animals will be hampered by questions of density and intensity that we weren't experiencing ever. And we've been in existence since, I believe it's something like 1847.
That's right. The Crowley Museum and Nature Center goes back to the 1800s.
Before Sarasota County was even a county.
Yeah. Yes. And it was a place along a trail where you could ford the Mayaka River on shallow, flat stretch of the river. And so that's why Old Mayaka was started.
And this is an example of where the regional planning concept didn't really serve Sarasota very well, because Manatee County was in the Tampa Bay Regional Planning Council, and the vast majority of Lakewood Ranch is in Manatee County. And so the comprehensive planning that you would like to see, where you have this one ownership that straddles two counties, was thwarted by Sarasota being in the southwest and Manatee being in Tampa Bay.
Mm-hmm.
And so we see this. This is a, I don't know if it's unique to Sarasota, it probably isn't, but this has been crippling. We have Longboat Key, which is divided between two counties. And if you can imagine having one island that isn't two cities in two different counties, that's problematic to begin with. We have Englewood at the south end of the county, which is split between Charlotte County and Sarasota County. So that makes Englewood planning more problematic. We have the historical, and I'm sure Lourdes is having to contend with this, we have the historical artifact of the north end of Siesta Key is in the city of Sarasota. And that is a remnant or effect of the way land is divided in Florida by township. And so townships are 6 miles by 6 miles, 36 square miles. And so there's one township, and it ends there just at the south end of the northern part of Longboat Key. And it is simultaneously responsible for Manatee County being divided between Manatee and Sarasota. So if you were to measure, get your rulers out, listeners, measure from the southern boundary of the city of Sarasota on Siesta Key, if you measure 6 miles north, you'll find it's the dividing line between Manatee and Sarasota County on Longboat Key. So, and I guess we could argue that there are a lot of issues affecting Mayaka City that are related to Old Mayaka, but Mayaka City happens to be in Manatee County, and Old Mayaka happens to be primarily in Sarasota County. So we have these situations where coherent, clear thinking about the future would be greatly facilitated if people hadn't drawn boundaries where they did, and these boundaries are serving to promote chaos and confusion because the lack of coordination across those boundaries.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned the contrast between Manatee, which has the Tampa Regional Council, and then Sarasota, which had the Fort Myers Council. And you may probably remember that when Old Myakka was expressing its concern about this advance of Lakewood Ranch, the commission was asked or was told by Rex Jensen, hey, you know, this comp plan you've got here, it's a little too complicated. I'd really appreciate it if we could, simplify it a little bit. And so he said, do you mind if I write my own chapter? And I'll write what I think we need to do and keep it simple. And I remember distinctly Mike Moran on our commission saying, we know you can do this. You're the best. So we love it. Just go ahead. Go for it. Mm-hmm. And so he did. Now, this is the comprehensive plan that's supposed to be the public agreement between the people, the government, and the developers. And how did we get to the point where a developer is writing a chapter of the plan? So that's Sarasota County. It is not exactly what we were getting when we had a regional planning council.
Okay, so one of the things you pointed out in your introduction was that after the Great Recession that started in 2008 and we started coming out of it in 2011, the developers focused a lot more of their money and attention on influencing the county commissions. And so I think we see that in your contribution reports that SCAN is developing, like how much money is going to the pro-development candidates and how influential the developers are in front of the Planning Commission and in front of the County Commission. Do you want to elaborate any more on that?
Well, I think what we're seeing is that when we talk about this, say at our meetings where we have a bunch of different communities, present, is that they all recognize the same syndrome. That rather than have a healthy and kind of symbiotic planning environment, what we have is a rigged game. And when people get together and they all say, "Oh, we have the same problem," it's back to the wisdom of crowds. It's like everybody is seeing that we don't have a giant, complicated issue in Sarasota County. Well, we don't have many of them. We have one, and that one would be the control, the capture of the board by our developers.
Would you like to give us a brief overview of the Siesta Key challenge that Lourdes has mounted and what the status of that is now?
My understanding is that, first of all, Lourdes heroically brought the county to its knees by showing that it had violated its own comprehensive plan, mm-hmm. that it was not allowed to approve mega hotels that it had approved, and those approvals had to be reversed. This was a tremendous court victory, followed immediately by Benderson Development coming in and saying, we propose to change the comp plan. We'll change the rules. And then Lourdes' argument will be moot. And that's basically where things stand. Benderson will be coming in. I'm not sure when. Perhaps have you heard when they're coming in?
No.
But their proposal to alter the comprehensive plan is going to be coming up, and this is going to be a very hard-fought case because they do have the power to change the rules. And
Benderson has the power, or the county?
The county.
County has the power to change.
The county is the board that can change the rules. Benderson can tell them how to do that, how they would like it to be changed.
Yeah.
And the public will get up and say, we don't like this, don't do this. And it will be very interesting to see how that plays out.
Yes, the whole issue of intensifying development on the barrier islands in an era of rising sea level is a great question. Second Heart Homes is a nonprofit organization that provides housing and support services to homeless adults in Sarasota and Bradenton. Their mission is to revive the dignity and mental health of individuals experiencing homelessness who are committed to improve their mental health. Second Heart Homes is a nonprofit organization, therefore it relies on donations in order to support its goals. More information can be found by visiting secondhearthomes.org.
Tom, John and I both went to the latest SCAN meeting at Jacaranda Library in Venice, and something that I found intriguing was this pledge that they asked candidates for the Venice City Council to sign, saying that they would not accept any dark money, they would disavow any dark money support, and they would not engage in negative campaigning. Am I recalling that correctly?
Well, first of all, I want to clarify that it wasn't SCAN that was promoting that idea. We were hearing about it, and I think it's a great idea, from Venice Thrives. Mm-hmm. Jan Vertifoy, probably destroying her name, but there. She and some other organizers developed a clean campaign pledge. And the basic idea was just to not accept dark money. And basically to say, I'm running for this board, and I will not accept dark money. And what happened was the two challenging candidates signed the pledge, and the two incumbent candidates declared that while they were not going to sign the pledge, they certainly, you know, would be careful about dark money. And those two people lost their seats.
Mm-hmm.
And the Venice Council now has two challenging people who are on the council and are concerned about what the people of Venice care about.
I think one of the components of that is that if someone someone was making statements that were derogatory or inappropriate on your behalf, that you would disavow that, that you would say, these people don't speak for me. And I know when I ran for office, a bunch of us signed a pledge that basically to run a clean campaign, and it was being violated. And it was something I believe called the Civic League, the Sarasota Civic League. And I went to the Civic League and said, hey, these people have signed the pledge, they're not obeying it. And they said, oh, well, we don't do enforcement. Yeah, it's sort of an honor system. And I went, well, this is useless. And I don't even know if the Civic League still exists. It was just such a problematic. Unless you're going to actually back these things up, getting people to sign pledges and then with no compliance mechanism is really problematic.
Apparently in Venice, though, the idea was if you don't sign the pledge, you're kind of publicly admitting
that you're willing to take dark money.
Well, they're thinking that maybe this could be useful on a countywide level.
Right.
Yeah, I think it probably will be useful on a countywide level.
Particularly if someone is willing to call balls and strikes and say when they're violating it.
Something that has become common in municipal elections is that these vague, vaguely positively sounding outside dark money PACs will create a lot of ugly mailers that arrive in your, if you're registered to vote and you have a record of voting frequently, they come, they're delivered by U.S. Postal Service to your mailbox. And you never really, I mean, you can tell by the shady visuals about who they're supporting and who they're not supporting. And I think that really has, and they're either from Jacksonville or Tallahassee, and you don't really know who's paying for these things. And it's, I think it befuddles and confuses and overwhelms voters about what their choices are.
Yeah, I would say that's fair. You get these large postcards stuffed into your mailbox, and the more of them you get, the more you know, dark money is coming to my door.
Yeah.
I would just say this about Sarasota. I'm puzzled because we have an intelligent community, we have an affluent community, we have people here who should be more attentive to what's going on. And I say this because we value science as a people. But if you look at our board, I have not heard the word climate change once. And I've watched many meetings. It's almost like Rick Scott's, announcement. You cannot say the words climate change. It doesn't exist. Well, this rejection of science, this to me should be one of the reasons that we want to change, because informed planning uses science.
What's fascinating is to go to the legislative delegation meetings where they held, prior to each legislative session, they held the legislators for a given area, hold a meeting, and they take public testimony. And it's typically 98% various institutions, the hospital and the municipalities and nonprofits. There are a few of us citizens that show up. But Longboat Key routinely shows up and says, we need better support for rising sea level. So they know it's an issue, but it doesn't necessarily, get anywhere. So
Tom, once again, tell people how they can get in touch with SCAN.
Sure. Okay, so the blog, again, is scansarasota.blogspot.com. The email is sarasotacitizenactionnetwork@gmail.com. And I wish I had made that shorter as an email address, but that's what it is.
Okay.
You've been listening to Our Changing Environment on listener-sponsored WSLR LP Radio 96.5 FM, broadcasting from our downtown Sarasota studios on Kumquat Court.
Today's show, number 35, featured Tom Matrullo with SCAN, the Sarasota Citizen Action Network.
Previous shows of Our Changing Environment may be accessed at the WSLR archives. Go to archive.wslr.org.
If you'd like to be notified about our upcoming shows, you can join the Facebook group, Our Changing Environment.
And tune in at 9 a.m. 2 weeks from today, May 14th, to hear our interview with Melissa Maxey, who heads the Sea Turtle Conservation and Research Program at Moat Lab.
Right now, stay tuned for Amy Goodman and Democracy Now! At 10 a.m.
And don't forget to check out the live music, public affairs, and other special events at Fogartyville on Lemon Lane, 6 blocks north of Main Street here in Sarasota.